Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
April 7, 2022. Wait a second, my mic is low. April 7, 2022. Allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me babble. Anyway, it's Thursday. It is the second to last broadcast day of the week for the O'Shelly Effect. And no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, because most of you will catch us further on down the stream, we appreciate you for joining us. Anyhow, what do I have for you tonight? Well, in the first hour, Michael Swanson, the man behind WallStreetWindow.com, the author of The War State, as well as the book Why, the Vietnam War, which is the first in a series about the Vietnam War, is with us in the first hour, and I have no idea what Mike's going to want to talk about, although I'll probably torture him with financial questions, but maybe he'll take us in another direction. Guess you'll have to stay tuned and see. In the second hour, I know that Joseph L. Flatley is joining me. Not sure if J.G. Michael is, but we'll have the failed state update, if you will, in the second hour. So, Mike Swanson, without any further ado, man, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Good to talk with you. How you been? And happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is. It is indeed my 50th birthday today, Mike. So I'm kind of surprised I'm still here. But here I am and still making noise as per usual. Appreciate you saying that, though. And obviously I'm not celebrating, right, guys? I'm doing this. I DJ'd for a while on the stream. I did a little short attention span DJ theater for a couple hours, and then I produced the Jack Blood Show, and now I'm producing my show. So, yeah, no party. I don't know. Maybe something will happen when I get done tonight. We'll see what happens, or maybe I'll just do something on Saturday, and I'll not be online and available for people to bug me. But look, what's on your mind, Mike? I know I've been reading your emails, and you've been putting out some interesting information. I could comment on what Jack Blood was talking about in the last show because, of course, Ukraine is still on everybody's mind. It's still going on. I am definitely not in the same camp as the individuals that Jack had on his show. Yikes with what's going on there. I don't know. Somebody commented in the chat room, it sounded like RT over here. My apologies if that's what you heard, but look, I don't control the content of the hosts. I just don't. Anyway, Mike, what's on your mind, though? Because I need a drink, Mike. I really need a drink.
Well, look. I don't really want to speak about specifically what they were talking about. I don't really know what they were talking about, but when it comes to Ukraine, there are different opinions all over the world about it. Mm-hmm. And before we got on the air, well, I've been out of town. I went on vacation for a week, and I had to, you know, even though I send, as you said, you read the emails I send out, I was really trying to, and did succeed at it, cut back on the time I was spending on the internet. I went to Las Vegas is actually where I went.
Oh, another poker tournament, Mike?
Well, I didn't play a tournament. I just played cash games. You just sit down and play.
I got
and get
you.
Up.
You just went to play a little. Okay, but, no, but sometimes you do go to poker tournaments, so I know.
But, yeah, I haven't done that in a long time. But but on the thing about it, I'll just say the place was packed with people. I mean, I went there twice last year, and there weren't – the first time I went was right when things were so – I mean, time goes by. It was about a year ago, actually, right as things were opening up, and very few people were flying on the airplane. Mm. In fact, when I flew a year ago in May, the airport in Raleigh, which is where I flew out of, it was most of the stores weren't even open. There are very few flights. And when I got to Las Vegas, you could tell that most of the people that were there drove there from California. There are a few, you know, it's a whole different type of crowd and fewer people.
Well, right. But, you know, I got a question here right away. I know you're saying, oh, here he goes already. But it seems strange to me that anybody's got money to go to Vegas. I mean, I understand that the planes were a problem for a little bit. because they were restricting flights and maybe some people didn't have a vaccine, some people didn't want to wear masks, blah, blah. I get it. And Vegas does survive partially on people driving straight on in, right? So, you know, that's part of their revenue, but it increased during that time because those people that were driving in, they might have not had as many options. But I got a bigger question for you, which is weird. I can't imagine anybody having money at this time. A long drive, well, that means more gas. And we know that that's a controversial issue at the moment, right? Nobody wants to actually face it and deal with it. And I hate to sound like a Democrat in Congress the other day or anything, but hey, you know, they're making huge profits and the American people are getting squeezed for it. And that is causing inflation to rise. We're definitely in an inflationary period here. Almost seems like disposable income wouldn't be available to a lot of people, Mike. So what do you think about that? I mean, does it seem like it was a smaller crowd in Vegas when you went this time or no?
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. It was packed full of people and they were gouging people. On the hotel room rates, you can get a free drink if you're gambling, but if you're not, you went up to a bar, it was $10 for a beer. I mean, you know, there's inflation everywhere, as you said, but beers don't cost $10 where I live.
$10 beer. I mean, I can get a pack of beers for $10.
But the hotel rates were elevated too. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal when I was there. There's a guy, he runs a YouTube channel and a newsletter called Las Vegas Advisor, and he's been there since the 80s. And he said this is the fastest increase in rates and costs for Las Vegas that he's ever seen, and he keeps track of it. And the article, it had some casino executive that said, we're just going to keep raising the prices till people stop coming.
Well, but see, all right.
They said, what they claim is happening, it seems logical, is that there are a lot of people that have not traveled, you know, in the past 2 years, and now they're going to do it now. But if that argument's correct, this is just a temporary thing, and then those people, you know, they'll be spent out. So I think that's really an answer to your question. And one answer is, of course, look, we're in it's a big country. So, you know, out of what is it, 300 million people now, about, you know, there are, if one out of 300 million has enough money to go somewhere, that's still a million people that can go somewhere. But there were a lot of people, you know, you can just, one thing that was unusual, there are a lot of children there. So I never really seen that before.
Well, they started making Vegas more family friendly many years ago. And the reality of the retail market anywhere is that, honestly, there is usually two sets of principles at play, and one of them always winds up shifting the market. And I'll just talk about the one, which is tolerance. They will raise prices until they find that the customer doesn't tolerate it. And that is what they'll do. And then sometimes they'll push back a little, you know, and present promotions and then regulate the price and leave it at a certain level. But they always push for tolerance. What is it that people are willing to pay? Now, they did this with things like bottles of water years ago, where, you know, it was a 50-cent bottle of water to start with, right? And it was clean, it was clear, it was good, just like anything that you buy today. But now it's up to about $2, $3. And the thing is, it got incrementally pushed. It wasn't even driven by manufacturer costs. It wasn't driven by distributor cost. It was driven at the retail end. They could push it forward, then the manufacturer and the distributor realized they could add to their price, and so on and so on. So there's always a push for tolerance. Same thing usually happens in the fuel market, where they push for tolerance during times when people are going to spend more money, and then they pull the price back. Now, they stopped pulling the price back at a certain point. Now, I'm wondering with a place like Vegas, you know, I mean, obviously the rates have shifted around and everything like that, but there's a certain target they're going to go for where they have to have a certain amount of business to sustain themselves. But if they keep raising prices and people keep coming, they are in turn going to keep raising prices, right? So it's kind of normal, but weird to observe, you know, like it doesn't make sense. Like that beer that was already made, you know, the $10 beer, well, it might have been $9 a month ago. And did anything actually change outside of the fuel cost? Maybe, but most of the fuel cost was already paid before that. You know what I mean? So,
well, I mean, there is an underlying, and I mean, their prices are going up like crazy, but there is underlying inflation everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that, you know, gas prices going up, food prices going up, and it hasn't slowed down.
Right.
You know, it just hasn't. Last week, Biden, he announced that he was going to release some of the emergency oil reserves.
Right.
And I think it's a million barrels a day is what they're saying. And it was over 100 million they're planning on releasing over a six month period. And then they'd end the program in 6 months. And it's close to 600 million total stored. They're in an underground cannons or vault somewhere. But he announced that on Thursday. And since then, you know, the price of oil has just fallen a little bit, about 5%. But energy stocks have gone up in price. Exxon has gone up in price.
Well, see, and that's that argument.
So it's had very little real impact at all.
Well, that's the argument that was going on in Congress here, is that in different states, they're, you know, putting a moratorium on the fuel taxes, right? And the idea that, you know, people are being dangled with this idea that not only has Biden released some of these reserves, but we have the possibility that he might even, you know, suspend parts of it, because a lot of that tax is federal, by the way. But either way, the state tax is being suspended. They dropped the gas price a bit. Overnight, we saw like a 20% or 20 cent gas, you know, cost on the gallon drop here in Georgia. Right. But it didn't stop the raises at the pump. See, after they adjusted for the tax being laid off, the prices continue to climb. So no matter what we're doing, the prices are continuing to climb. He's adding what, 100? Is it 100 million barrels a month or a week? I can't even keep track of it.
Over six months.
Okay. So whatever he's doing there, it's apparently a drop in the bucket. It hasn't really changed anything. And what do you do when you're looking at the fuel companies who are obviously not saying, well, we're going to go through a little austerity here. Maybe we'll make a little less money and try and help people out. We'll drop prices a little. There's no way. It's like this $100 barrel of oil, I think, is now going to become permanent. Which, you know, does not bode well for you at the pump or for when it is you don't want to freeze to death if you're in the wrong part of the country. I mean, this is going to be rough.
Well, I actually think worse than the energy in oil is food. And maybe not so much in our country, but the price of wheat and corn have gone up, you know, like crazy. And they haven't pulled back. Now, I feel like every time I go to the grocery store, I'm getting less bread in the loaf of bread I buy, but I'm not measuring it for a stick or something.
Okay, so I am sometimes. Just want you to know. And I don't need a stick to take a look at something and go, well, that many ounces was there last week. This many ounces is there this week. And with anything that's...
Is it shrinking?
Yeah, it is. In other words,
I knew it.
When the price is not going up, the ounces are going down. That's it. And then I'll tell you the truth, what has happened just this year, and a guy called me a liar on YouTube for saying it, but the thing is that both directions are pushing. You're getting one less ounce, right, on a product like tomatoes or whatever. Now they're for a pound, it's a certain price. But if you go by the ounces, what happens is the ounce price is the same, but it's less in the package if you buy a package. Now, you go and you try and buy them by the pound where they actually have to weigh them, and guess what? The price is up. So they're pushing in both directions. It's like they're twisting the knob, and a lot of people are not noticing it. But they are starting to notice that, wait a minute, I used to come out of here with this amount of money, and I would fill my basket, right?
Yeah.
And now they're going, well, I got half a basket, and I'm paying the same money. Yeah, exactly, because you lost 30%. I'm telling you right now.
We, you know, it's worse than other countries. I mean,
no, I understand it may be worse than other countries, but I'm just saying. I don't live there.
It's bad. It's bad. You don't, you know, but it's really bad in Afghanistan.
Yes,
or Egypt, where this it causes people to starve, and a real food shortage. It's not simply food going up in price, but shortages of food, and the problem. With what people, I don't think most people understand or know, you just don't think about it. We're so disconnected from nature and how the food is even made.
Of course.
I mean, but when I was a child, my grandmother, she had a 100-acre farm and she grew corn, but you wouldn't want to eat the corn. Because it was field corn. Now, one time I was in Williamsburg, Virginia. I was at when I was in college, and I was at some historical conference, and I was in this town by myself, and I saw this. I needed to get something to eat, and there's a store restaurant called Country Buffet.
Right.
And I went in there as a buffet, and you know, they had different stuff and they had corn out, and I looked at that corn and I knew it was field corn. That's what my grandma grew, and I knew what it looked like, and I said, I can't believe they yes. would feed people this.
I took a piece
just to make sure, and yeah, it was field corn.
No, that's the kind of corn. Now tell people that's the kind of corn that you would use. You'd feed it to animals.
Right.
For
cows,
chickens.
It's grinded up, you know, into I guess a meal for pigs or chickens
yep.
and whatever.
Yep.
And they had that in this restaurant, and it looks different. The kernels of corn are smaller, but anyway, the point is, this corn is used to feed animals.
Right.
So when the price of corn goes up, it means that it costs more money to fill up the bellies of these pigs, these chickens and cows. And therefore, that becomes an added, you know, they go up in price just from that.
That's one factor. See,
just one factor.
And the other thing is, and not just the feed price, but now, ready, Mike? The conveyor belts and stuff that they use in these large slaughterhouses. That all requires electricity. When the electricity rate goes up, guess what? Your food rate goes up. Then you got to put it on a truck. Listen, I'm giving you the ABCs here. There is a whole book you could read on it, okay? You put it on a truck. Now you got to transfer it somewhere, don't you? It goes to a packaging facility, doesn't it? So when it goes to the packaging facility, it travels. Therefore, you got a gas price on it, right? Or diesel price, because you got to move it. Anything that's in a truck requires this, yes or no? Then you got to refrigerate it, right? If it's meat, there is a whole chain of issues that come into play here when it comes to delivering that meat. That corn is just one of them.
Yeah. And then the gas prices impact it too, not simply from, you know, operating the cornfields, but say you grow the chickens. Last year, I was driving somewhere in Maryland at one time, and there's a lot of chicken processing plants in the area we were in, and saw this truck with all the chickens in it, and they were so packed in these cages, you could tell they could barely move. It made me think of, you know, movies of people going to the concentration camps or something.
Well, you know, people have made those comparisons, especially animal activists have said that, you know, it's like a genocide against a creature and all this. And I realize that there is a moral argument for that.
Well, I still ate chicken today. So
no, listen, I still eat meat, Mike. I'm not going to say I don't, but my choices are getting slimmer and slimmer here because, you know, the cows are now costing more. So therefore, the meat is costing more.
Well, at Walmart, I looked before I left. The steaks in Walmart were $16.
Yeah, and the
they're not good steaks.
There you go. I was going to say that the steaks at Walmart.
No, they inject those steaks with dye. It's crazy. It's awful.
They inject them with dye, just like they put that pink slime in the hamburger meat and everything else to keep it looking pink. And they spray it with literally like viruses in order to kill off the bacteria that can grow on them. If you don't believe me, go look it up, but you won't want to eat a hamburger for a while, okay? It's all reality. And the thing is, the stuff that Walmart
gets...
Well,
that's why you have to really cook the food.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But still, you're still, you know, so now you have cooked toxins as opposed to, you know, I'm just saying there's some stuff you can't cook out of there. And this pink slime thing is really bizarre. I mean, really, if you eat meat and you don't want to be disgusted, do not look up the phrase pink slime. It's literally what they call it. And look, your Walmarts and stuff, they have the cheaper stuff. Okay, and how do they have the cheaper stuff? Just like you're talking about with the country buffet, they get the lower grade things, okay? Yes, it says USDA choice or what? Yeah, okay. You know how easy that is to get? All right. Don't go look up those standards either. Again, if you want to enjoy your steak or your burger. Because it's horrendous. So they're giving you the lower quality food, and even that is jacked up in price, Mike. See, you're looking at a $14 steak. Well, you know, I saw one the other day. I picked it up. Looked good. $26. And $26, I was thinking, might feed me and Mrs. O, maybe. I'm not talking about, you know, we're getting stuffed on it. I'm talking about we're going to split this thing and make a meal out of it with some rice and whatever. And $26. So, you know, I don't know what to tell people anymore about this. It's impossible. If you're finding cheap food, it is very, very weird that you're finding cheap food, and I would question what's in it. Seriously, I know that sounds crazy, Mike, and you probably didn't want to talk about this, but I just, it's horrendous trying to find food. You know what still is basically the same price, unless you shop at the dollar stores that now don't have dollar food anymore. Now it's $1.25, so there's a 25% increase on the crap that they were selling you from before. You know, if you go to any place at this point, you're getting price gouged. So, I mean... And it's on a massive scale because all these factors are coming together. The overall problem of what it costs to do anything is beginning to emerge. And I'm not sure what people are going to do about this. It's, you know.
Well, the people you talk with where you live or anywhere else, what do they think is causing this?
Well, strangely... look, if you're sort of like oriented one way politically, you're like, oh, this is the war in Ukraine is doing this because they make all the wheat. They don't make all the wheat, but they look, I get it's a factor, but it's not the thing that drove this. This was already going off the cliff before Putin ever made a move. Okay, so that's some nonsense.
Yeah, the inflation data started to really... We talked about it. It started going up in the last fall.
Well, I know it was going... Yeah, the end of last year, okay, it just started jumping. And some people claimed that it was because, well, you know, what's happening is all that free money, Mike, you know. I hear from people that it's either the war or, you know what it is? It's those COVID payments. They screwed everything up because now they've screwed up the value of everything.
Well, they stopped, though. So
yeah, I know that.
They could still be making it happen.
Mike, I'm not telling you what makes sense. I'm telling you, you asked me what people around me are saying. I'm telling you what they're saying. I mean, they could tell me that Santa Claus is bringing them meals. I'm not telling you it's right. I'm just telling you this is what they're saying, you know. And then on the other hand, it's a certain orientation is just Joe Biden is destroying the economy, either on purpose or through incompetence. And they're going to look to change it, you know, coming 2022.
The thing about him, you know, I've only seen a few of his appearances.
Yep.
And I didn't pay much attention over the last week, but on my, you know, and I haven't really looked at YouTube much, but I did look today when I loaded up today.
Yeah.
And there's this video of him where Obama was in the White House. Did you see this?
Yeah, where Obama came and did the speech and he called him Vice President Biden and, oh, that's a joke, that?
Yeah, yeah. It was really demeaning to him. And then there, I saw this clip on some Australian, it was on YouTube, it was some Australian TV channel, and they showed Obama was shaking people's hands after the speech, and Biden was just standing there. It's just, you know, it's just bad optics. It's just bad.
No, the whole thing is bad optics, and quite honestly, again... All right.
I mean, how could they make him look so bad?
I don't think it's that hard. Number one, you know, look, to say that Biden is not somewhat incompetent, it would be a travesty. I don't have the intellectual capability
it almost seemed as if Obama was demeaning him.
Yeah, of course.
And he shouldn't be doing that.
No, you would think so. In a normal world, it would be a bad idea for the former president, who was clearly tied to the current president, to be making him look bad. Yeah, I would say that in a normal world, but let's be honest here. Even if you hate the Democratic side, you got to give props to the fact that Obama at least seemed competent and well-spoken and also seemed to handle things, whether you agreed with it or not. He got done pretty much what he wanted done, you know, despite the problems of not having control of the Congress and all the pushback. And I mean, he was there basically to celebrate the Obamacare stuff, the Affordable Care Act, because it's been in existence for now, you know, a decade, despite the best efforts of the other side of the aisle trying to completely dislodge it from reality. But I mean, that's what he was allegedly there for. And yeah, it's kind of strange that he takes that opportunity to make Joe look bad, you know.
That's not what he should be doing.
No, he should be.
And that's what you think Trump would do.
See, that's exactly that's what I would figure that Trump would do to the next Republican president if it's not him. He would come out and go, you know, hey, look, you know, it's really great. I mean, I should really still be president, not you. Oh, I'm just kidding. Okay. That's the kind of, he would say it even more abrasively, but yeah. Obama very subtly, pretty much, let me put you in your place. which kind of weird when the former president is putting the current president like in his place, you know?
It makes you think there's the other side of Obama we never knew about. He's much, maybe he got a mean side or something.
Oh, guaranteed. I guarantee you that he did, you know, the sort of Jackie Robinson behavior where it's like, you know what, I can't say as much as I want to say in public. Even if we assume that the presidency is above board and actually has the power that it does, which I don't. But let's just say that we did. You guarantee that he had to be careful about certain things. Because he was indeed the first black president, right? So I'm imagining that that was an issue, but he's got nothing to lose. He's got his pension. He's got his money that he made out of the White House once he left, like they all do. He's set. What does he need to do? They bring him around to lend legitimacy to Biden. I mean, how sad is that? And it is funny what he did. But I don't know to what end, because he can't run again. I don't believe for a second Michelle Obama could win or even contend. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I guess we'll see. I'm pretty much thinking that lame duck Joe is going to go up against Trump again in 2 years after the Republicans seize control this year of the House and the Senate, because they almost have control of the Senate anyway. It's split. And,
what are the odds of them getting the Senate right now? I'm going to look that up.
I think they're pretty good. I think you should look at that Predictit website.
That's what I'm going to. I'm going to that now. I'll tell you.
See, we're thinking the same. They send me messages, but they wouldn't accept. I don't have proper ID to go on there, Mike. So I still don't have my ID situation straightened out. I am without papers, they say. Typical Italian, right? Anyway, ethnic joke at my own expense. Deal with it. You don't like it, complain to Twitter or whatever. I don't care. Mike, I gotta blow up a little steam here because it's a weird world we're living in. What are the odds? Have you come up with it yet?
I'm trying to find it.
Okay, no problem. Take your time, because I think that only a fool would bet against the Republicans taking control of the House and the Senate.
Well, I didn't. I just. Wow. Yeah, it's 76% chance that they'll get the Senate.
So you gotta. Okay. So you gotta. You bet a dollar, you can get 24 cents. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's your odds.
That's disaster for the Democrats.
That's hard. I don't think I've seen anything since a Mike Tyson fight that bet, as far as the odds go, where you got to bet, you know, $10,000 to make $500. I mean, that's, you know, that was Tyson. They used to close, I don't know if you remember, they used to close the Vegas lines on him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, that Buster Douglas fight went off. They closed the line. It was ridiculous what you had to do. It was like bet $1,000 to win a dollar or something. I mean, that's how bad it was when they closed it and then Douglas knocked him out in Japan. But anyhow, I mean, it happens occasionally. But I'm telling you now, I think only a fool would bet against the Republicans as far as taking control. Because even with a horrible crew, which they do not have good people that they're bringing out, not even really interesting people or, you know, somebody who's kind of rock-ribbed in any way as a conservative coming out, they got plenty of crazies that are going to step forward. And they're going to retake and take a bunch of Senate seats. So that's going to happen. And I think the House will shift, too. I don't know what the odds are on the House. The House is probably a little different than the Senate, but the Senate is almost a guarantee. I'm figuring that they'll have control of that. I mean, they only need to get one seat, and that's the end of it. You know, and Manchin's not really a Democrat anyway, so what's the difference? I mean, he's a Democrat in West Virginia, but I mean, in West Virginia, I mean... anyway, I don't even want to go there. But I'm just saying, a Democrat in West Virginia is not even remotely a mainstream or leftist
this thing has
of any kind.
The Republicans, 55% to 46% to win in 2024.
Yeah, those odds. You know what? If I was you, I'd lock that in because those odds are going to go way the wrong way, real fast. You're going to make serious money.
Well, I don't think it was like this 6 months ago.
It wasn't, because I saw it. It was
because I haven't looked at this since then. You know, this is pretty crazy.
No, even 6 months ago, when Biden was starting to falter in the polls and everything, and his approval rating is now lower than I don't know anybody's. You know, the thing is, they had him still at 60-40, depending on who he was running against. On other places that I saw that are actually fairly good odds makers. That do take the temperature of what people think. I would not bet on Biden or Harris taking the presidency in 2024 with your money, Mike. I mean, I just wouldn't do it. If you gave me money to bet, I would not do it in good conscience to bet on them taking the presidency again. Either one of them, even if Biden steps aside.
Trump at 28% and DeSantis at 23%.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, it doesn't matter who they run. See,
well, I'm saying it's which one, you know, it's 5%. You know, it could be either one according to this.
So you can make like say 20. You can make 72 cents on a dollar bet with Trump or DeSantis. I forget which one you said. One's 28. One's 23.
Yeah, Trump's 28.
Okay, so you can make 72 cents on Trump if you bet on him now. To take the presidency, but he hasn't declared his candidacy technically. So it's still open. But once he does, you're going to see those odds shift. And if DeSantis declares it or becomes a vice president, or God help us all, I don't know what would happen I don't think Trump would accept vice presidency. But if they both run at the same time, then that changes the odds a lot. I'm telling you, whatever it is, look at the Democratic number because it's crap. There is no way that anybody approves of them. Democrats don't approve of the job behavior at this point, of the performance, excuse me, or the behaviors of what's happened here. I mean, the only thing that anybody could say as a positive, which was a disastrous one, is the removal of troops in Afghanistan. And that was a mess. Other than that, what has he done? The economy's in the toilet, right? As far as, you know, fighting the virus being a key issue, I mean, I saw polls on that, too. And even the people that are in on that are like,
no. In October, I ran around a bunch of towns and cities in North Carolina, and I went to, I think it was Lexington, North Carolina. Mm.
You know, I want you to look up something on that website, if you wouldn't
mind.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, because somebody brings this up in the chat room, and it is a good question. Okay. What are the odds on Biden getting impeached over the next 2 years? And I do mean 2023 and 2024, because there is that whole other idea that we're coming after the Democrats as soon as we seize power. I think we're going to see ultimate gridlock in Washington, because that's all the GOP is going to do, is go after the Democrats now. So I'm figuring Biden's got to at least get impeached once in 2 years. I mean, I know it takes time and everything, but
will Biden be impeached by June the 30th, 2023?
Yeah.
23% chance, yes.
Okay, I would take that bet. But does that pay off if it's announced or if it actually goes through? Because I'm telling you, I would take that bet if it's announced for sure. And
this just says the House of Representatives has to vote by majority to pass articles of impeachment.
Oh, okay, so they send it over. All right, by June of 2023, let's think. So that gives them 6 months after they actually get sworn in, the newly minted GOP-dominated House. Huh. Yeah, I think I would bet on that, Mike. I really do. 6 months is enough time. I think some of these guys are probably drawing up papers now. Getting them ready, because they know that they're going to take the House. So as soon as they do, why not? All the committee assignments get done. I mean, that only takes, what, another 30 days after
this morning?
What would you
impeach him for? He hasn't done anything.
Does it matter? You know, they didn't impeach Trump for half of the crap he pulled in public. They impeached him on some nonsense instead of actually going after him, right? So I don't put that past either side of the equation. I equally hate both sides. So I got to tell you, and they're always despicable in political operatives that do not care about the truth, the law, or what the reality is. Now, will Biden be fully impeached, like as in convicted in the Senate? That is an open question.
That won't happen.
Well, that's an open question. I'm telling you, if you have a fully, it depends on how many seats the Republicans win. If they, I don't know how many seats are up, even. I got to take a look at that, because if they can win and get the necessary majority, which I think you need 60, right? 60 votes to get it done.
Well, this is putting 53 Republican seats in the Senate is most likely.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many again? Sorry.
53.
Okay. Not enough to convict him then. No. So I'm figuring he gets impeached through the House. They pass it over to the Senate, and that leaves him open to get impeached twice, just like Trump. So I'm figuring that's exactly what'll happen. Same kind of thing. Doesn't matter what the facts are. I don't even have to conjure up a charge. In my chat room, somebody's saying he's violating Article 4 every day. It's irrelevant. It is absolutely irrelevant. Trump violated a whole bunch of things, never got brought up, and that's exactly what they'll do with Biden. His protectors will protect him, and that's it. I mean, unless there is something so outlandish that, I mean, it's just inescapable. I don't think they'll get it done. They'll vote along party lines in the Senate, and that'll be that. It'll be 53-46, and somebody will have not voted somehow or abstained. Some crap. Something will happen, and you'll get either that or you get a complete vote, and it's going to go right along party lines. So they'll impeach him in the House. And I would take the bet on June of 2023. I definitely would. And if you have a further out date, definitely. But that gives him 6 months to get the procedures done. And I think even with the Democrats trying to drag their feet, and they go out and make the same kind of statements like that. What is that guy from?
Well, what were they doing last year? They didn't. They tried. They couldn't pass anything.
Yeah, good question. Right. See, again,
why couldn't they have just tried to pass some things?
Well, see, that's the amazing part, is that just like Trump had, you know, people go, oh, the Democrats obstructed him. 2 years, the guy had control of the House and Senate.
Yeah, he didn't get a huge amount done either.
And he got, like, nothing done. I mean, seriously.
Well, he lowered taxes. Other than that.
For some people, sure.
Yeah. That
okay.
It was real convoluted. And then, in some cases, your taxes could have gone up if you... with the state income tax situation,
okay, well,
the deductions on this.
Biden kicked the can down the road as far as student loans. You know, Biden got us out of Afghanistan. Whatever.
We do got, you know, Trump helped engineer a Cold War of China, and Biden's continued it, and now we got a Cold War of Russia.
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not?
That's what they've done.
Well, you need a Cold War. I mean, everybody needs a Cold War. I mean, it's like a cold beer, Mike. Everybody needs one.
Well, that's what the New York Times wrote months ago. This article that reads as if it's written for China, that said we need a Cold War to justify our defense spending and to get Congress to pass things, and without one, we can't do anything.
Well, you know, far be it for me to disagree with the New York Times.
Well, it's not that they're always correct. It's that they write, they are the mouthpiece of the national security state.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They have been for a long time, and they either do it by transmitting information or by sticking with the party line, which are not always the same thing. Sometimes you're putting out information, or you're putting out sort of a coded warnings that are right there available to in public to be able to elicit a reaction. And the New York Times has expertly communicated the wishes of the national security state now for, what, 50 years? I think as long as I've been alive. So, you know, the paper of record. Yes, it is the paper of record, and that record, you know, sits at the CIA, the NSA, the, you know, DIA. That is where that record sits. So, yeah, no, absolutely. But I'm laughing because it's so predictable, you know. Anyway, I apologize, Mike. We've now gone like 45 minutes here almost, and I'm just dominating the conversation. I don't mean to, but, oh, man, you know, it is one thing to be confronted with things on the ground. It is another to sort of turn the blame over to the hapless executive who is not really in charge of your grocery prices, et cetera. But that's what's going to happen here when it comes to people's sentiment. And the voting, I mean, it's pretty much a done deal. I'm not even going to bother to cover the election in 2022 here because there's no point. We already know where it's going. It's already over. 2024 is still an open question because there's some declarations that need to be made so we see who's actually running. But I can't imagine for a second that a Democrat is going to win, given the condition of things, given the fact that they've been turned into the party that is all about virtue signaling and protecting, you know, the fringes of its own party. And that, whether it is reality or not, is the perception. So therefore, it has become the reality. And again, who has gotten anything done now? Right? I mean, that's the big question. Even when you give absolute control to either party, they have the House, they have the Senate, they have... doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Unless it's somehow, you know, part of a greater agenda, they can't seem to get anything done. I mean, they got the COVID payments out, which Trump was good at doing too. Some people give him credit as if he imagined it or came out... but... you know, he did sign the checks. I'll give him that. He made sure to do that and send you a letter to tell you that he was responsible for sending your COVID payment out. I wonder how much that cost, by the way. Anyway, it's irrelevant. The COVID payments, the tax stipends, all this stuff that has come out. Some people think that that is what's responsible for crashing the economy, as you asked me earlier. But here we are in a virtual crash, Mike. So, anyway, more from you, sir. What else is on your mind?
Well, there's a 12% chance that the Democrats will keep the House and keep the Senate. 12%.
12% optimists over there, huh? Okay. So, I don't even give a 12%.
If you bet on that and it pays off, you'd make 88 cents.
Yeah, I think you have
eight times your money.
I think you have a better chance.
Almost nine times your money.
I think you have a better chance of you and me getting married in the next year. Okay, seriously, this is how bad this is. Okay, I would give that, you know, a higher percentage than what they're giving the Democrats to retain the House and the Senate.
Oddly, they're making the odds six that the Democrats hold the House and the Republicans take the Senate.
That's lower odds?
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. The odds of the Republicans taking the House, Democrats keeping the Senate, are 18%.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah. The Democrats holding the that's the least likely, sure.
Yeah, that's very unlikely. I would not bet against anybody who's telling you that the Republicans are going to take both the House and the Senate. I think they're going to jam up the rest of Biden's term with impeachment and obstruction, and that'll be that. And by the time he gets to 2024, if he lives.
One thing about all this, you know. when I took that trip, I read a book on the airplane for 4 hours, and there's a big difference between reading something and holding it in your hand. Mm-hmm. And consuming all this news and stuff on the internet. The stuff on the internet, it's always moving.
Well, I tell people, even with their books, that I prefer just a regular book all the time. Because, so let's just say I get your book, The War State. I get it on Kindle. That's nice, but what if I somehow have a problem with my Amazon account? Now I can't get into my Kindle books. You know what I mean? Or maybe
you don't own anything.
Yeah, and then they decide, okay, well, maybe they decide to ban your book, Mike. I mean, I don't know why they would, but let's just say they did for some reason. I don't know, you have a racist word in there that they have now deemed racist for some reason, which you don't, but read The War State and find out for yourself, guys. The thing is, let's just say they ban your book. Now it's gone, and I paid for it, so what are they going to do? Are they going to give me a credit? No, I don't have the book. So I'm telling you, you buy it, you put it on your own shelf. I mean, if you need an audio book, get it on a CD if you can. I mean, then The War State is available by audio. But thing is that, no, I don't believe in this whole, well, I've got it here virtually. That's crap.
The whole thing you're telling me about, it's just going to get crazier, the politics, the news. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm looking at a story right now. It's on the CNBC website.
Okay.
And Peter Thiel, who's funding a lot of the Trump Senate candidates.
Oh, Thiel, yeah.
Thiel, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Peter Thiel. He's a military contractor. Mm-hmm. He started out as one of the founders of PayPal, Elon Musk, and that's how he made his money. Then he got into these really strange security companies. He gets all these contracts with the government.
Security companies, all kinds of high-level classified stuff, and a board member at Facebook, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Well, I don't know, when did he speak? Thursday. At a Bitcoin conference, a cryptocurrency conference, and he said, if you don't invest in Bitcoin, that's a deeply political choice.
Okay.
And then he went to label various Wall Street people who don't invest in Bitcoin and attack them. Mm. He made a list of an enemies list.
Okay.
He said enemy number one, this is what he said, is the sociopathic grandpa from Omaha. He's speaking of Warren Buffett.
Okay.
And then he put up a headshot of Warren Buffett with the words rat poison over top of it.
Nice. So the knives are out at the elitist table, huh? Okay.
Yeah. And he said Warren Buffett has chosen not to allocate to Bitcoin. That's a deeply political choice for him. And then he said he's investing in woke companies instead.
Woke companies. Uh-oh. Okay, so it sounds like his choice is deeply political. Woke companies. How does a company get woke? I mean, objectively, I'm asking a strange question here, but Mike, do you know how a company gets woke?
I don't really know what they're talking about.
I mean, do you think it's just that they have to, what, contribute to the Black Lives Matter movement, and they have to, what, make sure that they have standards where they have to have a certain amount of people of color?
Here's a list of the... You can judge for yourself.
Sure.
Here's a list of some of the companies that Berkshire Hathaway invests in. Let's see. Dairy Queen, Kraft, Nebraska Furniture Market, NetJets.
Okay.
See's Candles.
Oh, wow.
Helzberg Diamonds, Geico.
Okay, so
Fruit of the Loom.
So all the people that have given in to
Business
pressures.
Wire.
Yeah, all the people that have given in to pressures to become more diverse, or to, like, say, in the case of a food company removing, say, Aunt Jemima from the pancake syrup and all that, things like this, you're a woke company now. Okay, I got it. I now see the pattern. If they've
but
given
it sounds
in,
like Thiel's arguing that instead of buying Bitcoin, Buffett is encouraging this by investing in these companies.
Wait a minute.
So he's now on the enemies list.
So Buffett is part of the woke company investor enemy list, is what you're saying?
No, he's an enemy. Warren Buffett himself.
Okay, who's the woke guy?
He's saying he is by investing in woke companies.
Oh, I see. Okay, so Thiel is woke, but also says that Bitcoin is a bad thing to invest in or a good thing?
Oh, no. Thiel says Bitcoin's good.
Okay, so...
This article says he owns several hundred million dollars in Bitcoin.
So Bitcoin good... Woke companies good.
Yeah, he's saying if you don't invest in Bitcoin, you're an enemy.
Ah, okay.
And you're doing bad things, basically.
Okay. So I guess Papa John's Pizza is on that woke list because they, you know, fired the CEO, Papa John himself, and ran an ad campaign with Shaq. So they're probably woke now, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying this is an example of the madness.
No,
everything is becoming. I mean, this is ridiculous what this guy's saying.
But this is insane. This is, you know, people that wear sneakers are evil. I mean, that's what this comes down to, right? I mean, whatever. I mean, look, if rich people are going to turn on each other, you know, very much like Chris Rock getting slapped in the mouth by Will Smith. Like I said, one millionaire assaults another. I'm not all that upset about it. But it's a weird thing to watch emerging, because isn't this having an influence on Wall Street or no?
I don't think so. It's just some stupid story. Yeah, but I get. Okay. But it's this constant. So I got an email 2 hours ago. I don't know who this person is. Adrian Beyk is how you say his last name.
Okay.
I don't know him, but he says. This is what he says. I hope this email finds you in great health, happiness, and warmth. Well, that's nice.
Of course.
And then he says, in case you missed my previous email, I don't remember it. I probably deleted it. But it says, Quanta Vici, V-I-C-I, is back. And we have a new collection of jackets, Vegan leather gloves. Could that be woke?
Oh, vegan leather gloves. Vegan leather gloves. Vegan.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, what that means is that they have a pleather, basically. They have fake leather because they're not using cows.
Okay, so that's woke.
No animal products are involved
that's
in making.
Be woke,
that's got to be woke.
And it's got embedded wearable temperature control technology.
Okay.
But here's the kicker, and why he's telling me this. It's got a special discount today, which includes, this is what it includes, unique snowflake NFT art.
Snowflake NFT art.
And it's got a link for me to get it right now.
Of course it does. You know, Star Trek is starting to offer NFTs now.
I'm not going to watch it ever again as long as they're doing that.
Really? Oh, that's too bad.
Well,
Mike,
I don't want to see. I watched the one you got me watching as it plays out.
Yeah,
but I'm not watching.
Oh, that sucks.
Someone else play Captain Kirk and these characters.
No. They have a new series coming out next month, which is Strange New World. So you get to see Captain Pike, which is the guy before Kirk, right?
Yeah, but they got someone that's going to play Kirk, I think.
Well, maybe. You know, they got a new Spock in there. I mean, the guy's not bad. You saw him on Discovery.
I don't like. He's weird. He acts like he's mentally ill.
Yeah, he does for part of the series. Well, all right. So you're not on board with mentally ill Spock. It's okay, Mike. I don't mind. I don't hold it against you. You know, you talk to me all the time, and some people would say I'm mentally ill, so it's okay. It's okay. It's not like you hate them.
Yeah, but you don't act like that character does.
No, I don't. I'm just making jokes, Mike. What am I supposed to do? We're down to the last minute, and I don't know what to say anymore with this weirdness of these tech guys battling with each other. Elon Musk purchases 9% of Twitter, and, you know, now that's a big thing. Look, I'm 50 today and I don't know what planet I'm on anymore, Mike. I really don't.
Well, that's how I'm starting to feel too.
It's just, we live in such weird times. I advise you guys though to be in the know and go over to wallstreetwindow.com and, you know, just get yourself on the mailing list over there. Mike will show you what he sees in the world, and God help us all. Not because of what Mike is showing you, but because of what the world is becoming. I mean, what can I say? Mike, anything you want to say
need,
on your...
We need a life raft. Forget about a lifeline. We need the life raft.
You know what? I used to be against those guys who want to go to Mars, and I'm thinking, maybe that's the place for me. I don't know. Mike, what do you want to say on your way out the door, man? Anything?
Well, I don't know what to say. It's just so crazy. But
fair enough.
But no, these people. But you know, I don't like this Peter Thiel and Elon Musk.
No, of course not.
They, by the way, they present themselves. They have created a cult following.
Well, everything is apparently a cult, and I'm not in any of them. I don't know, Mike. Maybe I'm just being left out. But don't be left out. Read The War State by Mike Swanson. Why the Vietnam War by Mike Swanson. Visit WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. And Mike, are we going to do this again next week?
Well, we'll see. I don't think I'll be here next week, but I'll be here the week after.
All right. Thank you. I need my sane friends. And I don't know if my sane friends are coming up in the next hour, because I think Joseph L. Flatley and J.G. Michael will be with me next. And maybe they're a different brand of insanity. Let's find out as the Ocelli Effect continues. Right, Mike?
Well, happy birthday, Chuck.
Thank you, Michael Swanson. Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com. Stick around. The Ocelli Effect will be back after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1960.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away.
Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Revelation through conversation.
Disorder. Ochili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Second hour of the Ochili Effect continues now at Ochili.com. But of course, you could be hearing us some other time, some other place. And no matter where you are, who you are, we do appreciate you. Anyway, just before I get into my two guests that are on with me every other week on Thursdays, and I'm so grateful to have the Failed State Update team with me, because we're going to get into some of the stuff that they've been publishing, and a little bit of help I got from one of them with a recent guest, a couple other things. But before we get there, just want to remind people that indeed, it is helpful at this time if you have the ability to make a donation to Ochili.com. It did cost a lot to take care of the hacker problem and all that, and it's now under control and has remained under control despite the fact that there have been hundreds of attacks per day on the website. Apparently, the security is working out, so I guess it was worth going broke, but yeah, here's my birthday, and I can't afford to get a Happy Meal, all right? So that's where we're at. Okay. Anyway, if you want to help with that, see, I'm a terrible pitch man. You know this, right, guys? Yeah, there it is. There is a donate button, and I appreciate any contributions. And by the way, if you just share the show around, tell your friends about it, I'm happy about that as well. Also, tell your friends about the Failed State Update, because I got to say, here's another group of guys that are underfunded, just like me. They may not be getting hit by the same hackers, or maybe they are. I don't know. Guess we'll find out. Joseph L. Flatley was the author of some very interesting books out there, which I do tell you, you should have physical possession of. And of course, one of the greatest podcasters of all time, in my opinion, J.G. Michael from Parallax Views. Incredible interviews, incredible guests, very cool stuff. Always, always unusual. Never do I get tripe or typical crap from J.G. Same thing with Joseph L. Flatley, which is why it is a logical pairing for them to be co-hosts on the Failed State Update. So let's start with J.G., because I know he had something to say about what was going on in the first hour with Mike. And, you know, I'll give you guys the links to their work and how to support them and how to follow them and all that with the show notes, I assure you. But let's get into it, J.G. First of all, I had a guest earlier this week that I shouted out to you on the show that you put me in touch with. And I'm really grateful because it was just a good time, actually, for me. And it allowed me to make a point that I think needs to be made, which is that, you know, cannabis criminals, according to the system. Come on, man. When are we going to grow up here? First of all. Second of all, the guy's hilarious and brilliant and unfortunately in a bad mood because he's going to prison for 5 years. But, JG, anything you want to say about the Daniel Music experience?
The real life Better Call Saul. And, you know, all I have to say is I had to get him on Failed State Update and I had to get him in touch with you because I saw him interviewed on, he was on my friend Ben Burgess's show, and Ben does like a sort of a democratic socialist sort of left wing show, but he said, have you ever heard this guy Daniel Music? He's from your neck of the woods. He's from Pittsburgh. And I said, no. Get me in touch with him. And then I learned about his story. I saw that Dan had been on Thaddeus Russell's show. That's a more libertarian sort of style show, although I don't know if Thad would call himself that. But a lot of libertarian style shows have covered him, oddly enough. And I saw the commercial he did as a defense attorney, where he's, you know, he says the lines, consequences sure do suck, don't they? And then he says, you know, you need a defense attorney that thinks like a criminal. And I thought it was hilarious, and you know, I guess it went viral.
Well, even funnier there really quickly is the line he adds in at the end, and he spins a dreidel and goes, by the way, did I tell you I'm Jewish? That's hilarious, because it's the kind of humor that usually gets you canceled. But, you know, again, I feel fully liberated to make a Ginzo joke if I want to, because I got a vowel at the end of my name, and I figure you're allowed to make fun of your own people. So I found that hilarious, but also true, given, and that's how I started the interview, I think, with him, which was, you know, interesting that you put that in there, because we are racialist if we're not racist in America, and so the idea that, you know, do you want a Jewish lawyer? Probably. So the idea that he threw that in there along with all that other clever stuff, I thought was absolutely hilarious. I mean, the different criminals thanking him. Thanks, Dan. You know, that they're actors.
Who's your favorite criminal that they showed?
My favorite is the point at which the dude pulls something off, and he's got the two braids. He pulls something off. I forget what it is, but he drops down, and then he deals to a guy who's in a Steelers, like a dirty-looking Steelers pullover. And that guy also gets busted for possession. That's my favorite right there.
I laughed hysterically at the point where the prostitute shows up and she says, thanks, Dan. And she gets in the car and you go over to the other side of the car where the driver is. And he says, thanks, Dan. So you have the prostitute and the John. All you need now is the pimp.
Oh, look, I'm just saying that that's great. But to me, my favorite one is the guy. I didn't expect him to do anything after that. And he turns around, and he sells something, and then the other guy's got it for possession, right? So it was like the whole thing's brilliant.
It's great. Yeah. And I'm so glad I came across Dan. It's weird because I would have thought I knew more about him. Because he's from Pittsburgh and he did make the news here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the name was only vaguely familiar with me. So I'm glad we could all get in touch with him because I think his story is really interesting. And I think, you know, if Biden wants to claim, you know, oh, there shouldn't be federal marijuana charges, which is what he said, and Cory Booker and Bernie Sanders called him on the floor for that. You know, they were mm-hmm. like, oh, come on, you're BSing. Well, it turns out Biden isn't keeping to his campaign promises about marijuana and the federal charges.
Yeah, it would be nice, but it was weird to have a guy on that I could actually commiserate with about how things used to work. You know, like on the streets, it was too funny because he says, you know, I used to go and hang out in Asbury Park in this certain spot, and I'm like, yeah, I know exactly where you were. And it was very strange. But then again, that's on the other side of the state from Jersey. You know what I mean? Like, most of the people I would deal with would be from Philly, so I would have never heard of them. And I'm actually surprised I hadn't heard of them before you kind of made the introduction. And you pitched it perfectly. You were like, the real life, Better Call Saul. I'm like, okay, I got to see this. Because I've seen attorneys operate like that, but never seen one make a commercial. you know? And a good commercial at that. So anyway, I don't want to take up too much more time with this, but really want to thank you again for that because, you know, it's something that I think is well worthy of consideration and necessary for people to look at. You're saying, strangely, libertarians would look at this. I think this is one of those interesting nexuses.
Well, no, real quick, Chuck, I didn't think it was – I guess what's strange about it is that I think that Dan is, like, pretty openly, like, a Bernie guy, like, I think even, like, a DSA guy.
Yeah.
So what's strange about it is I haven't seen a lot of people on the left support him, but it's been the libertarians who have the opposite politics of him. So that's sort of what I meant by strangely, and I should have prefaced that.
Oh, okay, because, yeah, no, he did say on the show that he really wanted to be on the Bernie side, but, of course, you know, Bernie got kneecapped, and they thought, well, we'll compromise and support Biden because he'll at least, you know, lean toward cannabis freedom, basically, which, cool, I'm all good with that, and that's a fair idea, you'd think, but he feels kind of betrayed because he actively worked to get people to vote for Biden, thinking that that was the better solution. You know, you often get betrayed by these people whenever you put any faith in them, but no, he said right on the show he was a Bernie bro or whatever, but obviously that wasn't going to work out, so... Anyway, I still say a guy who does no harm shouldn't be sitting there having to eat a nickel, as he put it. You know, somebody who didn't hurt nobody. You know, when you commit violence, it's one thing. I can understand the need for punitive action. But, I mean, a guy who's literally stimulated the local economy, right, and created a business out of what, a plant? yeah, I got no issues, you know, and I think the government needs to leave the hell alone.
I think these people don't have issues. That's sort of what you were going to get at, I think, is like, yeah. I think libertarians, leftists, I think there's even younger conservatives that are like, why is this guy going to prison? Why is marijuana illegal?
Yeah, that's the thing, is we can all sort of coalesce in that one space and say, this is stupid. And it's odd that, you know, incrementally it's changed in some places, but I mean, even in the legalized areas, there's still a problem. It's, I guess, give it another generation, right? Anyway, enough of that. What else is going on? You wanted to tail on to what was going on the first hour there?
I didn't have much more to add. Okay. Other than, like, Peter Thiel, he's part of this whole group of people who think that Bitcoin is like the future and the blockchain is going to liberate us. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know why that is. I don't completely understand it. But yeah, there's a whole crowd that is like the only thing that will stop the woke empire of darkness is going to be Bitcoin. You know, that stuff that John McAfee was trying to sell you on before he died. So I don't know why you would listen to John McAfee and think like, yeah, I want to take advice from this guy who was wanted in Belize for murder. But, you know,
Well, you know, it's not completely illogical that a murderer could give you good, sound financial advice, but at the same time, no, I would question the source. You know,
well, I think that a lot of people that sell you Bitcoin, they want you to buy in, mm-hmm. and then they may, how shall I put it, they may get out after they get you in. Yeah. If that makes sense. So,
well, see, that's one thing you got to say about the whole cannabis business is that that's not a let me get you in so I can get out business. Anyway, fair enough, JG Michael. So I got to obviously turn over to your partner here, who I might have put to sleep already, running my mouth. But Joseph L. Flatley, I've been dying to talk to you about this, actually, this whole Whitmer trial deal, because again, something else that was mentioned on a show on my network earlier that I disagreed with was the portrayal, the characterization of that trial there in Michigan. So I know you've been working on this a bit. You put out a few things about it already, but you're still working on it. Is it done, your work on this, or what?
Well, we're waiting for the I'm so distracted right now. Too many screens.
Sorry.
We're waiting for the verdict. The jury's been out for 4 days now.
Mm.
So when they come back tomorrow, that's day five, and that's rather interesting. You know, if they thought that the government had an open and shut case, they would have been out of that jury room and back in court in 40 minutes.
Well, do we know anything about what they've been asking about over these 4 days? Because, you know, the jury always yeah. has questions. And if they're asking about points of law, that's one thing. If they're asking to review evidence, that's another thing. Do we know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been asking. Well, they made a the first day of deliberation, they made a request to review evidence. And for some reason, I don't quite understand, because I wasn't in the courtroom and mm-hmm. I'm not legal. Like certain days evidence they can't see for some reason. Hmm. So like they asked to see some evidence and, you know, kind of at the beginning of this deliberation stage, and the court was like, no, you have your notes. You can't see it. And then today they were like, we want to see one of the charges relates to this like IED that defendant Barry Croft and a couple other guys tried to build out of like a firework. They said commercial firework, whatever that means, presumably not something you can get at the supermarket. It was like a firework and a bunch of pennies for shrapnel. And okay. You know, tomorrow they're going to see the pennies, and you know, the judge said you could see any evidence from day 13. So who knows what that's all about. But apparently they're still just trying to drill down on the evidence. You know, it's I was talking to JG earlier, actually, and you know, the point I made to him was that Michigan is weird. You know, if like, you know, I love Michigan, I love a lot of people in Michigan, but they're weirdos. That's why the militias basically started there, the modern militia movement. And you know, the case for entrapment was pretty compelling, maybe not on a legal standpoint, but on a like a personal or narrative standpoint, it was pretty compelling. So get the right jurors. I could see them really, really cutting these guys a break.
Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering about, is if there is a plausible way for somebody who went in there with the mindset, you know, that, like mine, okay, who generally thinks that the government is fully capable, willing, and able to set people up. You know, I'm exactly the guy that the prosecution wants to get rid of off the jury, if right. I was ever called to a jury, because I want to know fact by fact exactly how this went. Because if you can't show me that there is no way to impeach that evidence, I'm going to lean toward acquittal. I mean, that's who I am. And I'm wondering if that's what the problem is here, because apparently some of the points of fact are a little questionable. Now, that's not to say that I think that it's been fabricated or it's some kind of, you know, move against the militias to, you know, because the people that wanted to get Trump want to get them, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, in a vacuum, if this was the only case like this in existence ever, you know, you could reasonably say that it doesn't matter what the FBI was doing behind the scenes. These guys trained. Yeah. These guys, you know, built a quote-unquote kill house to practice clearing rooms for when they kidnap the governor. They made multiple reconnaissance trips to the governor's summer home. It goes on and on and on. Right. And at a certain point, you're like, you know, they may be crazy. They might be incompetent, but they were up to something.
Right.
But where I come from is this isn't an isolated case. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we're going to have to take a look at a whole at these conspiracies that the FBI is busting up and say, at what point is the conspiracy actually an FBI conspiracy? Like, they ended up arresting and trying 15 guys. Two guys skipped, you know, four guys, the federal case, two guys took plea deals, and then the rest are coming up in state charges in August. 15 people. So we, on the record, we've been able to figure out that there were 12 feds and informants. 12 feds and informants to bust 15 people. Like, when does this become an FBI plot? When it's 50%? When it's 15 on 15? You know, when there's one more? You know, it's just like there's a much larger issue here, and I think, you know, as much as I think these militia guys, these particular Wolverine Watchmen militia guys are jackasses, I'm like, we need real transparency as far as what the FBI is doing. And we, you know, and that includes, sorry, FBI, sorry, Department of Justice, you don't get your prosecution. Like, this is just too ridiculous. Like, I don't know that you can prove that these particular defendants would not have done it without the FBI's help. So it's like, so where's reasonable doubt? That's a ton of reasonable doubt.
See, that's the thing. I'm thinking to myself, like the 93 bombing at the World Trade Center, you know, where you have the possibility, and I'm not saying that I concur with this entirely, but if the FBI doesn't effectively assist with the building of the device, does the plot go forward? You know what right. I mean? And you ask this question in a different way here. Like, without that, I mean, and I've looked at some of these Klan cases where, indeed, look, I'm not here to defend the Klan, okay? But what I'm saying is that if you have a bunch of FBI assets in there and they're encouraging them to take it to the next level, who's really responsible for that, right? And this is why we don't even have all the records on those people today, even when they were doing it in the 60s, because nobody wants that scab picked. Okay, a lot of pus. And you're going to find that in some cases, it may have indeed been the, you know, the machinations of somebody who was supposed to be under the control of the feds. And, you know, if that's the case, then you now have to ask the reasonable question, would this have happened absent that? And that is an open question in this case. From what I can tell, again, I'm not, you know, following it closely, but seems to me like just based on what you said and what I've been able to observe, it is a reasonable question to ask without the feds involved, without the police agencies involved, and I don't even know if we know about any local involvement, right? The thing is, would this have gone as far as it did? Or would it have been just guys talking? Which, I again, mean, you know,
the FBI involvement is so, you know, the one guy, Steve Robeson, he's the founder of the Wisconsin 3% Militia. He's 57-year-old. He's like a biker dude, tough guy. He has a rap sheet going back to, you know, his 20s. And founded the Wisconsin 3% Militia, holds a national meeting for militia folk, in 2020, early 2020. He's begging people to come to the meeting. He's paying for their travel expenses and their board and all this stuff. Of course, it turns out he's been a snitch this whole time. Basically, like, this is the meeting that the whole scheme was allegedly hatched at. Like, no one would have been there if it wasn't for him. Dan Chappell, Big Dan, they called him. He was the formerly anonymous criminal, what they call a CHS, an informant, confidential human source, I think.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's getting the guys together to teaching them, like, giving them firearms training and egging them on, like, when they're on tape, when he's, like, wearing a wire, egging them on, you know, saying, like, oh, you told me about how you can't stand COVID contact tracers the other day. Tell me what you would do if you would if you saw a COVID contact tracer. And then, you know, then the guy goes off. So he's like, they're getting these people drunk, they're getting them high, they're egging them on, and it's like, you know, and there, you know, there's at least one or two other there's a couple other undercover special agents for the FBI that have similar roles. And it's just like, it's not that these people were incapable or unwilling to be terrorists. They very well could have been. They sure as heck talked like it and acted like it. But we just don't know. And I just think it's a very dangerous state to be in, that, like, law enforcement can just make stuff happen and, like, isolate us from, like, an actual understanding of the situation.
I've been going over
this in my head a lot, right? Because I don't like these guys. I don't want them to get out of, to, like, escape from jail, but it just seems fundamentally unjust if they do go to jail, you know?
Well, see, but that's the thing, is even in the case of a very common action that occurs all the time locally, all across the country, prostitution busts, okay? You got a situation where there's, you know, the police, a hooker. I mean, we all know this. We've seen this on every movie, TV show, whether it's reality or it's fictional. We know this exists, where a prostitute is out and, you know, she engages and makes an agreement. They take him to the hotel room. They arrest the guy, right? So you got to ask yourself, okay, and in most cases, I would agree that probably this guy is going to find somebody. But again, is there possibilities that sometimes if you're not dangling it in front of them, and drug buys have been done the same way, where people have bought, you know, stuff off of cops, or they bought stuff off of people that have, you know, now cut a deal. You know, I'm going to hang myself out there. I'm going to keep dealing like I was, but now you're going to bust my people. And
it goes so far beyond that, because it's not even like, you know, just one cop and one woman. It's like, what if you
made yourself
a pimp and created, a sex trafficking operation with the intention of, like, busting some prostitute, you know, like.
See, now, some people would say that that kind of thing is invaluable, right? That it's absolutely necessary, that this is how law enforcement gets done. But to me, I see it as, well, you've dangled things out there. You have now, you know, there is a certain line. There is a possibility where, look, you put up a sign, a shingle, so to speak, right? And you put it out there, and the people are going to come because that's what they're looking for. I get it. But on the other hand, if you throw a bunch of shingles out there where they have whole teams of these people doing this, Okay. Have you not created the situation? Is it possible that absent your actions, again, maybe somebody wouldn't have even engaged in this, or they would have been less likely, or there's a lot of degrees here depending on the way it's done. And in this case, again, from what I've been able to glean from different pieces of coverage, it's very questionable here as to whether these guys would have just, you know, talked a bunch of smack, as they do, because they do. And believe me, I've interacted with plenty of 3%ers, okay? And they talk about a lot of things when, you know, when they're convinced that they're only among people that are friendly to them. They talk about a lot of stuff. They don't do most of what they talk about, okay? You know, they'd like to do this and they'd like to do that. I mean, I could tell you that I know for a fact there were plenty of people talking about how to go and take Obama out, you know? But did they do it?
You know, it's just the whole, that whole culture has this language of violence and rhetoric, and it's like rhetorical violence, and it's really ugly. And I think it could go some really terrible places. But, I mean, it really looks like the FBI was like, these guys are making all these, you know, it's social media did them in. You know, they're doing YouTube and Facebook videos and Instagram posts and Facebook posts, and it's like, they're making themselves look so ugly that the FBI must have thought it'd be very easy to wave some meat in front of them, have them go nuts, drag them in front of a jury, show them all their social media posts and be like, see, these guys aren't good people.
Right.
And you know what? They're probably not good people, you know, or they are good people, but, you know, part of their brain's twisted because they live in a failed state.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, it's not a clear cut, you know, open and shut case of, these people, if left to their own devices, would have definitely gone through this.
See,
we have no way of knowing.
I can't argue with you, and absolutely true. We have no way of knowing that now. Okay? And this is the problem. This is the core of the problem, and I don't know if that's why they're reexamining evidence. I wasn't in the courtroom, but I mean, it's very possible that if you and I are even half right about this, okay, and of course, the question and the trope that I've heard now repeated is that, you know, this has something to do with what the January 6th thing was going to turn into, and you know, and so on. I don't know that I buy that. Okay, and but I do buy the idea that absent the FBI's interaction here, absent the feds, absent the police action, let's just put it all together, absent whatever it was, the prosecutor's office, doesn't matter. Absent all that action, I think you might have just had some guys with guns in the woods drinking and shooting and training. I mean, really do.
I mean, how does America, you know, take apart terroristic threats in other countries? Like, they, you know, use human intelligence. They they listen, you know, they read their email. I mean, of course, there are civil liberties. I don't want America to start reading its own citizens' emails. But, like, there's ways to do detective work and police work that does not involve manufacturing plots.
See, that's the thing. If it's a real plot, you know, by all means. But if it is manufactured, I mean, it's a travesty. And doesn't mean you got to like the person either, you know. It could be, you know, that was my whole point, by the way, when with the Rittenhouse thing. It was like, oh, he shot a pedophile. I'm like, he didn't know he's shooting a pedophile, even if he was. You understand? So the idea is that, okay, indeed, you might agree with that result, but that's the way that people would look at this. These were bad people. Screw them. Well, no.
Yeah.
Being a bad person, being a piece of crap, is not against the law, because if it was, there'd be, we'd have an even larger prison population here, okay? So, right. You know.
Well, what complicates it for me is,
and I'm not saying I disagree with everything that these guys believe or anything. I'm saying that even if they're terrible human beings, if they didn't harm somebody, or they wouldn't have harmed somebody absent the FBI's interaction.
And I mean, and what fast, and JG, feel free to bust in anytime. What, you know, what makes this such a compelling story for me is, like, these guys didn't just come out of the womb and, you know, and brush themselves off and decide to go and commit an act of domestic terrorism.
No.
They are on the receiving end of, like, the collapse of the American state, of, you know, the Rust Belt, the collapse of industry, not having jobs, you know,
but see,
not
that,
being educated. It's like
that,
it's
that
the
is
social.
Literally the cause of all violence, actually, because and this is the thing. And now I know JG's got to get in here, because I keep having these discussions and people are like, well, you know, in this part of the country, in this place, whatever, name it, doesn't matter. They're gangbangers and they do this and they don't care about life. And I'm like, yeah, why don't they care about life? You know why? Because they have been shown on a daily basis that their lives, now I know some people are going to get upset with me, do not matter. So it doesn't matter if you get murdered. It doesn't matter if you get maimed. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. It's fine. So if you get into that mindset, for one reason or another, whether it's the economic situation or it's because, you know, your city's been abandoned by the industry that kept it running, or you wind up in a social socioeconomic circle that just crushes you on a daily basis, why are
the
you
American
going,
sacrifice zones is what I like to call them.
Yeah. And why are you going to feel like any life has any matter, has any sort of weight to it, has any sort of value? Yours doesn't. Nobody around you does. So taking a life becomes a lot easier. Okay? Committing violent acts become a lot easier. In fact, they become transactional. And they become part of a way for you to maybe not be a victim. You know, instead of being hunted, you are the hunter. It is a very simple principle, and nobody wants to face that. And it doesn't matter what the race is or ethnicity is. There are plenty of people of all stripes getting crushed in many places in this way. JG, am I right or wrong?
No, totally agree. I find it interesting that, you know, you're covering this story flatly, but you would think if this was an FBI entrapment case, all the usual suspects within the what are they calling it now? The alt-light, the alt-right? I don't even know now. You think they'd be covering this story, and I'm not really seeing it that much. I think the new big thing amongst a bunch of right-wingers is like selling T-shirts that instead of saying Disney, it says Groomers, and then it says Bring Ammo. I don't know if you saw that, but
yeah. I mean, it seems like the you know, the alt-light industrial complex or whatever found something that's like more meme-worthy. I mean, I'm definitely hearing about this. Epic Times has done some actually pretty good reporting. They got a guy named Ken Silva.
What's his name?
Ken Silva.
Yeah, Ken Silva does good work on this, actually.
Okay. Yeah. And it's like, but, you know, and the word entrapment is weird. I don't know that it's technically entrapment. It's like something more insidious. I mean, entrapment is as I understand it, is a transactional. It's an open shut case. Like, you know, I law enforcement encouraged you to commit a crime. That's not exactly what happened here, but I mean, it's still ugly, whatever it is.
Well, in a roundabout way, it's true though. Cause again, as I said, absent their participation in the city, see, I'm saying it in a more technical way, but that's what it would be if it's true.
Well, you're thinking like, a person with ethics who can
mistake.
Who can go one step beyond face value. I think that the like the you know, the cold legal system aspect of it is more cut and dried, and but I mean perhaps the jury thinks more like you and me on this, and you know, perhaps that's not a bad thing.
Well, they're positively having to question it, okay? Because otherwise, as you said, if they were totally on the prosecution side, we know full well, or if they were completely, you know, against the idea of these guys being prosecuted, one way or the other, if they were on the extreme side, it would be done already. You don't take 4 days to deliberate over something like this, unless you have a split situation, and I got a feeling that's not the case. I think they're actually going back over it, and like you said, they're asking to see evidence again. It means that they've got questions and shows their thinking. So they're not just appealing to the emotional response that quite often juries do, for better or worse.
You know, there's been a couple like points in this trial that were very human and very amusing. Hold on. My phone started buzzing.
No problem.
There's, you know, one in particular you know, whenever I watch, I don't do much of it, but whenever I watch like Law and Order, one of these like crime shows that goes to court, you know, you always like watch people like testifying and you think, why don't they say this or why don't they say that? Or why don't you act like a human being? Why are you giving these like pat answers? So when the defense had a chance to testify, Daniel Harris was the only one of the four defendants who spoke on his own defense, which is pretty risky. I mean, going to trial is risky, but testifying your own defense is definitely risky. But the it was really interesting because he was able to give context to a lot of the like so-called evidence I don't know why I said so-called. Like one thing that was bandied about is, you know, they were talking about kidnapping the governor, and this Daniel Harris guy was like, you're crazy. You're never going to do this. Why don't you just like pretend you're the pizza delivery guy when you open, and when she opened the door, shoot her in the head. And it's like, which is ridiculous. Cause it's like the governor answers her own door when the pizza guy comes, you know, governor answers the door when she didn't order a pizza and the pizza guy goes, you know?
Yeah.
And, but you know, they use this as evidence of like, he's a cold blooded killer. And then when he took the stand, he was able to, you know, they, you know, his lawyers and him or whatever were able to like go through the whole exchange. And it was like much more like a joke. It was like, you guys think are talking about kidnapping the government, but you know, you'll never do it. I know you'll never do it. If you were serious about it, you just go to her house and shoot her in the head, you know? And, but there was one point where the prosecutor was reading like some of the memes back to Daniel and being like, did you not post this on Facebook? Did you not post this on Facebook? And, he was like, do these, memes like upset and disturb you? And Harris was like, no. And then the prosecutor is like, well, it disturbed Dan Chappell enough that he went to the FBI and became an informant. And, Daniel was like, well, that's cause Dan's a big bitch. Like the court
that's pretty funny.
And you know, and it's like, I think that's just a small example of kind of the defense was aimed towards communicating with the juror, not as like little legal robots, but like, come on, I'm a dude, you're a dude, you know, this is BS. I mean, you know, and I think this might be a jury that could really work. Maybe, you know, in like Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. It wouldn't work. But like talking to people very much like the who are like the defendants or whose loved ones are like the defendants, who understand where they're coming from, that's probably a good defense, good strategy. And I think we might see that bear out tomorrow or Monday or whenever they come back.
Seems like it's a good argument for a jury of your peers should be defined quite sharply.
Yes. You know,
because, look, I'm very sure in certain circumstances, if you don't have an understanding of the situation, you could be, you know, like I said, there are some people that might have been horrified by the discussion that I had with music on Monday, where we're like, look, you know, you're selling something to the neighborhood, it's not that bad, right? And some people be like, but that's the gateway drug. And yeah, okay, if you live in that world, fine, all right, I understand. But a jury of my peers, most of them are going to be smoking weed, you know what I'm saying? Yep. That's the way it is. Okay, and I don't even smoke a lot, by the way. I some people go, you must smoke weed all the time. I don't, but you know, I eat it occasionally. I mean, I'm just saying, it's if you haven't even experienced that and you think of it as some sort of mystical thing that's gone on here, mm-hmm. and you have no, you know, concept of, like you said, culturally what that situation is, you know, some things become more offensive than others. You know, like I said, growing up at the, again, I'm 50 years old, but anyway, you know, growing up at the time I did, some of my best friends, I guarantee you we had punched each other in the face more than one. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. Some people would be like, well, what kind of barbarian life do you want? It's not barbarianism. It's immature males. Okay? This is the way we used to behave. We hit each other with bricks and rocks and sticks, and these were your friends. You know, this is what you did. And now that's horrifying. Take people to court, even 7-year-olds, you know? I mean, really bizarre. To me, it's bizarre. But see, for somebody who lives in that world of, you know, I have to have a safe space, well, you know what? I don't want them in my jury pool. I just don't, because whatever the circumstances, they're not going to understand where my mind is coming from. And that is a big part of what's going on here. Was it in their minds to do this on their own? What was in their minds? Because they obviously didn't pull it off. They didn't even get close to pulling it off. So, you know, it's an issue. Anyway, JG, yeah. I know you've been a little bit quiet here, so I want to give you a chance to turn the conversation or add in. Sorry about that, but this is an extremely fascinating and interesting topic.
And no, it definitely is, and I don't think it's an entirely new thing. I mean, a lot of people don't talk about it, but even going back to the 60s, a lot of people think COINTELPRO was only targeting sort of left-wing activists, Black Panthers and whatnot.
Black Panthers,
yeah. But they were also involved in sort of targeting these right-wing groups, radical right-wing groups like the Minutemen.
Indeed they
and,
were.
I don't think people should gloss over that. It's interesting. The feds get involved in a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, like the original COINTELPRO, I believe, was put together to target the KKK. And that's kind of like evidence for, like, if you ignore, I don't think anybody knew about, well, I know nobody knew about COINTELPRO at the time, but you could, you know, in the 60s or whatever, or the 50s, but you can extend the metaphor, I don't know what it is, you know, you can extend the argument to the Wolverine Watchmen case and be like, you know, if you don't, you know, clamp down on this stuff while they're doing it to people that you don't like, they're going to use this stuff to come after you. You know, it's like, you know, the FBI seems to be, well, I was going to say equal opportunity.
No, it's
in
not
trappers, but obviously go against the left much more than, and Muslims much more than.
Well, that's the thing is that we didn't even mention Muslims here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Who have been targeted in this way. The right wing, you know, white nationalist groups have definitely been targeted. Not saying I like them. You know, but they have been targeted. And here's the thing. Even if they're speaking hatefully, it's speech. So to me, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just out of my mind, but I don't agree with everything that these leftist groups say. I don't agree with anything these right-wing groups say. And I say if they're not harming anybody, it's just rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And leave them alone. And I'll tell you what else. Leave the guy alone who wants to train in the woods. If he is on a piece of property, he's allowed to be there. He's got a firearm. You know what? Leave him the hell alone. I don't, you know, inserting themselves. We got to prevent this stuff. You know, we got to stop the terrorists. You know, here we go. Who's a terrorist? Okay. And again, there's certain points where, like you said, I mean, when you're talking about COINTELPRO, indeed it did. It here's where you can bring the Klan and the Black Panthers up in the same sentence, logically, because they were both targeted the same kind of way. Except that I feel as though there were more murders committed against the group that was the Black Panthers as opposed to the Klan.
Sure.
You know. But either way, you can see that the feds will target anybody who is not part of, I don't know, the vanilla society, so to speak. You know what I mean? So, and they did indeed go after plenty of left-wingers, plenty of right-wingers, probably more lefties than rights. JG, what are your thoughts? Oh, maybe
yeah, I
you killed him.
True. Yeah, they got to me. They got to me. The feds
Sorry,
are killing
they
me.
Got him.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more to add about it other than, you know, I think we see this a lot, you know, whether it's, I mean, it's interesting, right? You look at a case like Ruby Ridge, and I mean, I think that's a clear case of, you know, entrapment, and I have a lot of sympathy for what the Weavers went through, even if, like, I wouldn't want to live next to Randy Weaver.
Yeah.
But it's weird because I think a lot of people will look at a lot of these cases, and so for instance, the people who look at the Wolverine Watchdogs case, some of them will look at it, but they'll ignore how a lot of this was done in the War on Terror years against Muslims, right? Trevor Aronson writes about this in The Terror Factory. Mm. So, you know, this stuff has been going on for a long time, but I think people only look at whatever specific cases interest them or their interests. Whereas, you know, I think if you take a broader view, you sort of see the state apparatus going out of control, and just targeting people from all over the place.
See, and that's where I kind of come down on it. So, look, before we come down on this whole hour, which we're almost through, by the way.
I wanted to say one more thing. So sure. The reason I mentioned Ruby Ridge, right, is, you know, I've known people that they'll talk about Ruby Ridge and Waco, but they completely forget about the MOVE bombing. And yeah. It's like we sort of have to all come together and realize, like, all of these things are sort of interrelated.
Mm-hmm. You haven't heard any of my podcasts about MOVE, have you? It's a bizarro cult that you're absolutely right. They shouldn't have all been murdered, but it is such a crazy story. It's like a bizarro cult that basically engineered its own demise. We got to talk about that next time. It's fascinating.
Fair enough. But, I mean, I wouldn't have gone and jammed with David Koresh either. But, you know, I mean, I heard he was not too bad of a musician. Not sure.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have gone and jammed with him because he just wasn't my kind of guy. But it doesn't mean that I wanted to see that place roasted either.
Oh, yeah. Nobody. You know? I mean, like, I think what we're all circling around is, you know, people shouldn't have to die.
But that's just
awful that it's happening.
But again,
so often, yeah. This society really doesn't care about human life.
Oh, well, you know, here we go again. If you devalue it enough, what's it worth? You know, right. Dirt is actually a lot more valuable than people give it credit for. What are you going to say? Anyways, before we get done, though, I wanted to find out what's coming up because I know you're going to come to a conclusion on your coverage with the Whitmer kidnapping case there. With Failed State Update, I know that's coming, but is there anything else you want to give us a heads up on that's coming up on the Failed State Update?
You know, we're just, you know, actually not a ton of stories this week just because we're kind of revamping our media strategy a little bit, and that's what I've been thinking about.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the next big piece I'm going to do is I'm going back into the Finders cult.
Okay.
Alleged cult, just because I can't get enough of this story and nobody else can seem to either. So I've been talking to Marion Petty, and if you follow the Finders, this will make sense to you. The founder of the Finders, Marion Petty, his son George and I have struck up a relationship, and we're going to get some really interesting inside dirt on the group, and, you know, CIA ties and military ties and Cold War chicanery, if that's the right word. So, I mean, subscribe to the newsletter, failedstateupdate.com, and you'll hear all about it when it comes out.
Right. I'll have the link down there for failedstateupdate.com, and you can get to everything, including the Patreon and all that, right, through there?
Yeah, yeah. I got to build. Maybe I'll make a Patreon tonight. Substack is the best way to support
Substack.
Me at the moment, and the newsletter link right at the top of the website will take you right there.
Right, the Substack is Failed State Update. JG Michael still has the Patreon thing rolling. That's what it is with the parallax views. My mistake there, but I'll give you.
And
guys
I need support on the Patreon, patreon.com/parallaxviews.
Absolutely, I'll give you guys the links to all that with the show notes. But before I'm done here, I guess give each of you a couple of minutes to close out. Appreciate you giving me all that already, Joe. So I guess we'll go to JG. Anything you want to tell us about that's coming up on Parallax Views or elsewhere, by all means, go ahead. You put out some interesting stuff over the past couple of days, though, which I've been sharing. And
yeah, you've been sharing through the Wall Street Window syndication. Thank you.
That and also on just on Twitter anyway, you know, I did not share the thing that you put out about getting books from a certain publisher, but that's because he hates my guts. And so
we don't have to get into that, but right. I do. There are a few things I want to promote, and I may take a few minutes to promote that if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
So in the past week, I've had Dodd Schraub, who was. This is all for Parallax Views. Dodd Schraub, who was sort of the trusted troubleshooter and personal confidant for Libyan leader Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. She was around for half of his 42-year reign. She gets a little bit controversial, I think, for people at the end. She survived a NATO bombing after being put on house arrest by Gaddafi, and her views on Gaddafi are pretty complex. She thinks that Libya is worse off without Gaddafi, which I mean, we're talking about filled states. Yeah. Libya is a filled state now.
How are you going to argue with that? Not. Yeah, how are you going to argue with that, JG? Go ahead.
So then after that, we have Christopher Leonard, New York Times bestselling author and investigative journalist, who just wrote a really great book, The Lords of Easy Money, How the Federal Reserve Broke the American Economy. No, it is not the same as like the G. Edward Griffin books, like Creature from Jekyll Island. It takes a really different view, but I think it's really good. It's a history of quantitative easing and how it has changed the world, and not necessarily in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday I released a very, very important interview, at least for me, with Dr. Anel Shaleen. I always mispronounce her name. Dr. Anel Shaleen, a research fellow for the Middle East at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Dr. Shaleen is probably the foremost expert, in my opinion, on the seven-year-long Saudi intervention in Libya that the U.S. has supported through our taxpayer dollars, with massive amounts of arms going to Saudi Arabia. There's been bipartisan attempts by Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders and others within Congress to try to stop this. You know, the Saudi blockade has starved, you know, hundreds of thousands of Yemenis. It's really, really, really a terrible story. There's now a ceasefire. Whether that will hold remains to be seen. But I think people don't know enough about the crisis in Yemen. It's been called the worst humanitarian crisis in decades. And Dr. Shaleen is probably one of the guests I'm most proud to have on recently. In the next few days, I'm going to have interviews with Cindy and Craig Corey. They're the parents of the late Rachel Corey, who was killed, crushed by an Israeli IDF bulldozer in 2003. Actually, I'm going to be releasing that on April 10th, which is Rachel Corey's birthday. She would have been 43 today, 43 on April 10th, I should say. And then I also have interviews with Kara Cooney, a really great and fascinating Egyptologist, Dr. Amina Hoti, who is a writer on the religions of Pakistan. And then the big one that I'm going to have up tomorrow is a double feature with David Zirin, who is a guy who specializes in writing about sports and politics. And the other guest, and one that I think you will find fascinating, Chuck, and anyone else listening will find fascinating, is Karim Zidan. And I'm really, really happy with this interview because Karim Zidan is a journalist that specializes in the intersection between MMA and politics. Now, people may say, what do you mean by that? Well, if you look at, for instance, Chechnya, which is run by the warlord Ramzan Kadyrov, Kadyrov actually has his own fight club. There is a state-sanctioned fight club that Kadyrov runs called the Akhmat Fight Club. And one of the people who runs it, who is nicknamed Patriot, is one of the most dangerous men in the sort of Russian Federation. And he's also, you know, like an MMA fighter.
Right.
And it's fascinating because the Akhmat Fight Club is now getting involved in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, apparently. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, really interesting story. And it gets into the sort of dark side of MMA and politics. Not that I mean, it's not like an anti-MMA episode. I'm not John McCain being like, oh, it's just glorified human cockfighting. I love MMA, but there is like a weird story about MMA, Eastern Europe, and dictators that a lot of people don't know about, and Karim Zidan has been one of the only people covering it, so that's coming up tomorrow on Parallax Views.
Excellent.
And parallaxviews.podbean.com.
Excellent, and that link will also be in with the show notes. Mr. Flatley, anything you want to throw in on our way out the door tonight?
Yeah, I just want to mention that tomorrow, Failed State Update podcast is going to have JG's epic 2+ hour conversation with Daniel Musig, the real life Saul Goodman. So, guys can keep, you know. So, if you heard Chuck's interview and you're hungry for more, Failed State Update.
Absolutely. You can hear me and Dan talk about Jewish mobster hip-hop.
That is, and you know what? I was just going to say, I guarantee JG went in a totally different direction than I did. So it's not going to be the same interview. I guarantee that much because you do things, well, differently than me for sure, but differently than anybody. JG Michael, again, and Joseph L. Flatley. Joseph L. Flatley, also get his book. The full title, once again, Joe.
New Age Grifter, the true story of Gabriel of Urantia and his cosmic family, out now on Amazon and wherever else you get your books.
Exactly. I have a copy of it on my shelf. It's fascinating and goes, it's a great companion to the so-called Prophet from Pittsburgh, which was another great podcast that Joseph L. Flatley put out. LennyFlatley.net, right?
LennyFlatley.net.
There you go. And that's everything I got for you tonight. And hopefully I'll find out about sex trafficking in the Ukraine soon. Oh, God. I am Emilio Celli. All of you are indeed the effect. Have a good night.
Thanks, Chuck.